listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 207 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me right across the table is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. We're in the same Portland.
I know.
Rare as that is.
I cannot remember the last time you and I recorded a podcast in the same room outside of the DIY Musician Conference.
And we did one at Music Biz last year in Nashville.
That's true. We did. So that would
twice
be it.
Twice in Nashville. Yes.
That would be it. That would be it. So the bummer thing for you is you won't be able to be sitting there checking your email while I'm talking because I'll see
it. That's true, which is basically what I do. That's my chance to catch up on all my personal emails when we're recording this podcast.
But you're not only in town to work. You're here for a special event. I think you've mentioned on the podcast, but you can tell people what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So for the past few nights, I've been practicing with an amazing 9-piece band, and I'm kind of fronting it. It's a Peter Gabriel tribute show. I'm playing Peter Gabriel, and it is by far the most involved show I've ever been a part of. We have, you know, 9 musicians, a choreographer, a lighting person, a film guy who's doing 3D imaging for film stuff, props and set design, and I'm leaving other things out. It's lots of moving pieces, so it's pretty
choreographer
exciting.
So you got some dance moves.
Yeah. which so far we're mostly concentrating on the music still at this point, with a little moments of venturing into dancing around. But on Saturday we meet with the choreographer, who will, you know, get us all awkwardly dialed in.
Wow.
Yeah. It's gonna be exciting. It sounds like amazing.
And it's just one show, correct?
Just one show. It's next Thursday, March 15th. If anyone's in the Northwest, come to Revolution Hall and come see us do 2 hours of Peter Gabriel music.
All right. That sounds cool. Well, I'm ending the album creation process. I think we finalized all our mixes today.
Nice. Congratulations.
There's always room for that last minute. Wait, this is terrible.
Well, now you have the agony of mastering in front of you.
Yeah, I know. And that's going to start probably in the next couple days once we have the files. And yeah, we'll see what happens. It's turned out far better than I expected. I was telling you, you know, before we were recording about a song that I thought, I don't even know if we should do this song, that was like in its infancy when, you know, I really wasn't connecting with it. It was my song idea too. So I was like, I don't even know if we should do this. But it has blossomed into what might be the best song on the record and maybe a newer hit for us. So.
And I think I've heard you talk about how it went through several phases of really, like, I don't know if it was you or just the band and it, as a whole, saying, like, this is not ready, and then you went in different directions with it, right?
Yeah, we started out, it was sort of this laid-back, mellow, sort of this jazzy feel, for lack of a better term. It was still, you know, fit our band, but it would have been like, oh, that's a little different. And then when we went to track it, it just wasn't working. And so they ended up speeding it up. And I say they because I wasn't in the studio when they did that. They were actually FaceTiming me in, like, hey, what do you think about going in this direction with this song? Because it was like basically the drummer and bass player working together. And they sped it up and totally different beats. And there was a guitar idea laid down. It was all totally different. And then I tracked all the guitars for it here in Portland and some of my favorite guitar sounds I've ever recorded for that song. And after I did it, I talked to Danny and Michael, the guys that write most of the lyrics. And I said, these lyrics and the tone of the lyrics, the melody and the lyrics don't match anymore. The song is too poppy, too happy.
Quick.
It's upbeat. And then so the lyrics on the chorus kind of became a mouthful. And the tone of the lyrics didn't match anymore. And so they rewrote that, and then this amazing vocal arrangement over top of it.
Sweet.
And it's like, it just, when I heard it for the first time, I was just like giggling. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. It was just an interesting, you know, case study in the genesis of a song and how, you know, it's worth sticking with something if, you know, you think there's an idea there and playing it out, especially when you have that, you know, trust between band members of, you know, let's try this and let's go in this direction. You may not understand where it's going, but ultimately may be a better spot.
And I think there's that always that little voice that artists have, hopefully, when they know it's not quite right, but maybe they want to just rush to the finish line because they've already invested time or money in making it and getting it that far. And they're like, oh, it's good enough. Like, let's put it out. But like, it's good you stuck with that little, this isn't right yet. And then you, yeah.
We actually had a mutiny on a different song. And the music didn't change, but the lyrics and melodies were totally rewritten. And now it's a really catchy song. So we had two songs that had kind of some interesting, you know, people saying, no, this isn't right. This isn't good. We can make it better. And I think we came out on top. And I think it's our best release since our debut. You know, I think musically it sounds far more mature than our debut, but I don't know that we'll have the power radio hits like we did on that one.
It was so, a different era.
Different era. You're right. It was. So lots of exciting things going on. We should probably mention, I don't think we mentioned in the last few episodes that right now at CD Baby, it's our 20th anniversary. We're going to talk about some of that in our news section. But we have a great offer on distribution right now where you can save up to $20 off distribution. We took our standard distribution package back to 1998 pricing at $35, and you can save $20 off a pro submission, which also gets you publishing administration for your distribution. So that offer is going on right now. There's coupon codes right on the CD Baby website, so just head over to cdbaby.com, get your music out there. No better time to get your music out there than now. And if you got back catalog that you haven't added to distribution since the streaming world took over, then you need to get it out there. Lots of cool things happening for artists that have their whole catalog available. And I love how songs just find success in different places. You never know.
Yeah. And if you're working on something that's not ready yet, just go ahead and sign up using the coupon code anyways, and then, you know, submit the music when it's ready.
Absolutely. So yeah, cdbaby.com, head on over there. Today, we are going to be talking about five ways to ruin a press opportunity. It's one of those things where artists spend a lot of time thinking about how to get press, but they don't spend a lot of time thinking about how to make that engagement with a member of the press, whether it be a newspaper, magazine, blog, or radio station, how to make sure that interaction and coverage goes well, because there's plenty of ways to improve what they say about you or how the story goes, or, you know, to make it something where you'll never get covered in that press again.
And then, yeah, we've seen it where, you know, one really bad misstep in a press opportunity basically ruins your local career. We won't name names.
So we'll be getting to that in just a minute. But first, we have some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, we're going to lead off with some streaming news that's not about Spotify. Amazon says the feature of being able to create playlists has been one of Alexa's most requested voice features. The process here is pretty simple. When listening to music, the user can state, Alexa, add this to my playlist, or Alexa, create a new playlist. Furthermore, the user can ask Alexa to add songs to specific playlists that have been previously created. The support for the feature on both iOS and Android apps was added back in September, and Prime Music streamers and Amazon Music Unlimited subscribers will be able to use these new features. The latest feature adds yet another weapon for Amazon's fast-growing music streaming service. At least one industry estimate pegs Amazon Music Unlimited as having the second highest tally of music subscribers, though numbers haven't been verified. And a lot of this depends on how Amazon's Prime bundled streaming music service is counted. It's a scaled-down version of Amazon's full-blown Music Unlimited. Either way, Amazon's position in streaming music looks extremely strong, with voice activation potentially a huge part of the company's future music plans. Spotify Artists launches two new profile customization features that you need to know about. If you have a Spotify for Artists account, you know that you can customize your header photo, edit your artist bio and post concert dates, pin your favorite music or playlist to the top of your profile, and more. Well, now you have two more ways to strut your stuff on Spotify. One, a photo gallery. With your Spotify for Artist account, you can upload up to 125 pictures and edit them to appear in whatever order you prefer. You can also update your profile avatar from within the Spotify for Artist app to keep things fresh on your profile. Post your latest press shots, behind-the-scene pics, live photos, shots of you hanging out with fans, and more. And the second feature is social links to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Wikipedia. The About tab on your profile will now display off-platform links, so listeners that want to check out more from you can follow you in other places besides Spotify. Remember, as a CD Baby client, you get instant artist verification on Spotify, so you don't have to wait to claim your Spotify for Artist account. With the 20th anniversary celebration here at CD Baby, we've had lots of big news. The latest big news here at CD Baby is we just released a lot of data about how much artists are earning and the makeup of the digital landscape driving that revenue. First off, in 2017, we paid out $80 million to independent artists, which was up 33% over 2016. Much of that increase can be attributed to the explosion in music streaming and the continued growth of platforms like YouTube, where discovering indie music is far easier than it was in past years. Our total payout to independent artists has hit the $600 million mark. That's money to real indie artists, not major label artists posing as indies. Another interesting stat is the general shift in what services are responsible for this revenue. In 2011, iTunes made up 77% of all digital revenues, with Amazon coming in at number 2 with 10.5%, and the CD Baby download store was number 3 with 4.5%. Spotify was only 2% of the digital revenue landscape back then. In 2017, Spotify was number 1 with 35% revenue share for CD Baby artists, iTunes number 2 at 24%, number 3 was Apple Music with 13%, number 4 was Pandora at 8%, and number 5, Amazon with 7%. So those are the news items. Lots of interesting things happening.
Yeah, my favorite bit of that infographic that CD Baby put out is the part that shows that not only are, in total, the payouts increasing, but streaming is making up a huge percentage of it. Like, was it 5 or 6 years ago? It was...
Spotify was 2%.
But just streaming revenue in general was at 1.8%.
Oh, yeah, that was another... Like that. Yeah, it was like 1.5%.
Of the total payout, and now it's almost 50%, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. That, you can see that infographic and all the complete data on the DIY Musician blog. Just head over to diymusician.cdbaby.com. Lots of cool information there, and shows some dramatic trends.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I still, all the time on the blog, hear from people saying, you know, streaming doesn't pay. I'm like, well, look at this graph.
Yeah.
It's paying more and more and more and more every year, like...
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest year of revenue payout growth, I believe, in the history of the company. The other thing that's interesting is, you know, for the longest time, artists were just so focused on iTunes.
And right, it was almost the only place.
The only thing that mattered is getting on iTunes. I didn't care about the others. And when you look at the graph, it's pretty striking. You know, Amazon being number 2, and then CD Baby's download store being number 3. But how much it's fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is so interesting and why it's important for artists to pay attention to this is because you can't assume all your fans are on iTunes or Apple Music. I mean, if you include Apple Music and iTunes together,
that is one thing.
It's still bigger than Spotify, but not by much. But I don't think including them together makes sense because they're two different things.
Right.
So, but the idea is like you might have a fan even right there. You might have a fan using Apple Music that's not going to buy a download, or they might buy a download and never use Apple Music. But there's all these different platforms that have emerged to having decent user base, at least revenue from the revenue perspective, that you got to pay attention, understand the differences. That's why, you know, I think it's important for artists to check out Pandora Amp and their artist marketing platform. It's important to be connected to Spotify for Artists and just understand, even keeping an eye on Amazon.
Right. Yeah, one person on the blog wrote and said, well, how am I supposed to use this information? Like, what good is this going to do me? And I said, well, for one, it's an indicator of what baskets you should be putting your eggs in to some extent. Like, not that this information applies to every artist, yeah. You know, like, but it shows you where the big players are right now, and that doesn't necessarily mean you ignore the ones who are, you know, a tiny percentage of the revenue, because things change quickly and a year from now they could be on the rise, but it does give you a sense of like which ones are maybe a little more talked about than they are relevant, or if that makes any sense. Like,
yeah, well, Tidal gets far more press than it deserves for the amount of market share it has. It was like 0.5%.
Right. So don't waste so much energy right now worrying about that one.
Yeah. Also, it points to the importance of using tools like what we have here at CD Baby. We have herenow.com. If you're not familiar with it, go check it out. It's these one-page release pages that link to where your music is available in all these different stores. So it makes it easier to promote. It makes it easier to promote your music, because that's the challenge, you know, I've been dealing with our audience. It's like I send an email, and you know, basic email marketing or just marketing in general, it's like have as few options as possible. Uh-huh. Just send them here. You know, 5 years ago, just sending an email saying go to iTunes, you probably were covering almost all your fans. Where now that's not the case. And so using a tool like Here Now, which you can, if you use CD Baby for distribution, you can find it inside your account. You can just link over and snag one of those. But using a tool like that that takes people to a page where they can be directed to where
wherever
they want to go. So the links are pre-populated. You don't have to go find all these links. We do all that work for you. And it becomes an easy way to share the new release so people can find it where they want. So that's one thing that's key with all that information. Spotify, those additions seem cool. 125 pictures. That's a lot.
I put up 5 yesterday and I was exhausted. It's like, who is putting up 125 pictures?
I need to work on that. I'm planning on doing a big social media overhaul with the release of our new record, but getting some pictures in there. The one thing that, you know, what I was reading was from your article on the blog that I thought was interesting is you can use it as a way maybe to feature some fans or some, maybe some press people. Like you have a photo with some press people that might strategically fit to what we're talking about later.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, I thought in the way they were kind of spinning the announcement, they hadn't mentioned that. I just thought of that could be a possible use of these photos, but they did play up the thing of like, make this about current stuff. And it's not about like leaving your like permanent press impression on these things. It's like, post things on tour or what are you eating? You know, it was more about like what's happening in the moment. Use Spotify as a way of communicating in that way.
Yeah.
Both with the pictures and the bio. They're like, you know, update your bio every day if you want. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, make it personal, make it first person.
Yeah. And before, all you could link to was Wikipedia, which is frustrating.
Because not many of us indie artists have Wikipedia pages.
Or you have someone who keeps changing your Wikipedia profile without you knowing about it. We had that when the Small Town Poets Wikipedia page was set up. Whoever wrote it was not in the band, but I think they were in the past version of the band. Uh-huh. That wasn't Small Town Poets, because the whole history had nothing to do with what people know as Small Town Poets.
And it was all the origin story.
Yeah, but as it was, you know, it was kind of like, that was it. So I had to go in and rearrange it, and somebody wasn't pleased because they felt like their legacy was being erased. I'm like, well.
Oh, man.
So with Wikipedia, you can run into issues like that.
It's not as authentically encyclopedic as we want to believe it is.
But now you can add Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And so that's really helpful because, you know, then it feels like, you know, this page not only has a purpose, it's a place where people can really start connecting with you off the platform. I've always said I'm very appreciative of any digital service that allows artists to do that, because, you know, for years, iTunes is, as long as they've been kind of the thing, they've
closed
not,
system.
Yeah, not allowed that. And that's why they're, was it Ping?
Yeah, right. That was a long time ago.
And then they're the Artists Connect or whatever they call it. Yeah, yep. Why neither of those have worked, it's because it's just a closed system that no one's using, where if it becomes this vibrant thing where you can actually put it to use as an artist, then it becomes useful. And
well, I know there's, you know, business considerations at play, but I always feel like when a service stays closed in that way, it's like, why are you so insecure? Like, isn't your tool or whatever you're offering cool enough that if you do link to YouTube and Twitter or whatever, like, you know people are going to come back? They're so afraid to lose someone for an instant. Like, I don't know. It just seems like, whereas Spotify's like, well, we're confident in our offering.
Well,
so
yeah, I mean, it's like going to Target, the store, to buy a product, especially with iTunes, because you're buying something. Mm-hmm. It's like going there and expecting that person to not look up that product on the web, you know? It's like, you're a store.
Right.
I don't hang out here. I came here to buy something, and I'm going to use your thing to listen to it, but that doesn't mean you can't link me to the artist's website.
Uh-huh. That's funny.
And Amazon, you know, there's lots of people that think Amazon is positioning itself to really clean house. Their numbers are a bit sketchy because they bundle in the limited streaming service into Amazon Prime, which I have Amazon Prime, but I don't hardly ever, I don't use it for music. I do check out movies on there that are available for free for streaming for Prime users. But if they're counting me as a music listener, that statement would, those numbers would be faulty.
Flawed, yeah. I have some, well, my sister-in-law, they have Alexa, you know, on their wall, and I just find it fascinating to, like, you know, there's a games you can play with Alexa, guessing games and stuff, so I was doing that, and I was like, oh, hey, play some Chris Robley in The Fear of Heights. And up came my song. I was like, ah, this is pretty cool.
See, Chris, that's how they get you. Now they're just listening to you all the time, recording everything you say. They're going to... You're probably getting ads based on what they're hearing in your house.
Well, it's not my house. My sister-in-law, she... Yeah, it's creepy. We had an incident like that in the office yesterday. Some of our fellow marketing people were talking, and then up popped an ad about what was being talked about.
Well, I had that happen, too. Someone who works here came and was eating a granola bar I'd never seen before in my life. But I commented on it because I thought the packaging looked really cool. And I said, what is that? And he told me the name. And about an hour later on Facebook, I got an ad for that. I'd never seen it before in my life, never clicked on anything before.
And you think they heard you through your phone?
Yeah, or my computer. I mean, it's people. Someone here has done tests where he'll like turn his phone off and put it on the Spanish station and start getting ads in Spanish.
God.
So they're listening to us.
Yes.
My, the world has changed. When I was growing up, nobody wanted to hear what I had to say.
Right. Now they're trying. Everyone does, yeah. This is an episode of Black Mirror in the making.
Yeah. All right. Well, today we are going to talk about how to ruin a press opportunity. And like we said at the top, it's easy to spend a lot of time just trying to get the attention of somebody to cover you, whether it be on their blog, a radio spot on air. Interview or even internet radio, pre-recorded or podcast, you name it. There's so many press outlets now, and it's easy to think about, oh, I just want to get this person to cover my story or my music. But I don't think a lot of thought goes into actually how to make sure that interview or feature goes well.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this topic because maybe a year ago, I went to do a in-studio radio performance and interview at like one of the, well, I'd say it is the coolest radio station in Maine. And it had been a few years since I'd done something like that. And I went in and it was fine. It wasn't like a disaster, but I walked away feeling like that was a wasted opportunity because I don't know. It was kind of a flat line of an event. I feel like, you know, I was a little nervous because I was out of practice and I could have directed the interview more to more interesting things about myself. And it just was like, well, it wasn't a train wreck, but I could have made way more of that. And so there's a little shame attached to that.
Yeah. So we've got 5 points here, but I actually, while you were just saying that, I thought of maybe another one. But it kind of ties into something that we put in, but I'm trying to see. Yeah. It may be an extra one. I'm going to take notes of that.
A bonus way to ruin.
A bonus one. At the top of the show, you said something about one that went really poorly that might remain nameless. I don't think I know who you were talking about.
It was something that happened in the Willamette Week, which is a local Portland weekly. And it was maybe about 10 years ago, 8 to 10 years ago. I think we have even talked about it on the podcast before. And a band was criticized, I think, and then really took offense to it and... criticized in that publication, and they like started like a flame war.
I remember, but not in
a lighthearted way. And from what I remember, it was a really bad news. But
yes, that was an incident where it was like an album review, or a show feature, mm-hmm. one of those standard presses that many of you listening to this podcast are getting all the time when you play a album release show or maybe a special show in your hometown or having, you know, album release covered. And if I recall, it wasn't even that bad of a review. But then this person got on the internet thinking they were going to rally all their fans, like, these people are terrible. And it kind of backfired and made them just look stupid.
Right,
don't do that.
And then, you know, you could probably point to any number of famous Hollywood people or musicians really putting their foot in their mouth.
So we've got some points here that we think will help you be prepared so it's a successful exchange, you get good press, people want to have you back. So we're going to start with how to ruin a press opportunity. Number one is you're unprepared. You kind of touched on that. Why don't you talk about it a little bit more?
Yeah, so I think although I had put a lot of thought into the PR campaign, the story of the album that I had put out when I went to do this radio thing, I hadn't really practiced saying it out loud. You know, a lot of that stuff when you're doing the ramp up to a launch, it's a lot of written stuff and, you know, someone else helps you with your press release sometimes and things like that. So I had not verbalized this stuff. And then something else happens when you're talking where like it feels more personal and more confessional. So you might be a little more reserved. And I think that made me kind of go more to the middle of the road, the safer route, not as interesting as I could have been. And then another thing I guess the first thing is identify what's the most interesting thing about you, your story, your particular release or whatever. Practice it, you know, with your bandmates or whoever, your partner, just sit at home and like pretend you're doing an interview for an hour and a half or whatever and get familiar with it, kind of come up with your talking points. But what was my next thought?
While you think about that, you mentioned talking points, and that's what popped into my head while you were saying that before you even said the words. We're jiving here together. But I think that's something that a lot of band members, like if you're doing press and you have multiple band members doing the interview, if you don't have those specific talking points ironed out, these are the things we want to say. And even having some things, these are the things we don't want to say for various reasons, but it can get real confusing when you have multiple band members and everyone's just chiming in all over the place. It just sounds unprepared. It sounds, you know, no one's on the same page. It's really hard for whoever's doing the interview, especially if it's print or something that's going to be edited later. It's really hard for them to understand what the key things are.
Yeah, that kind of leads into what I was thinking of, which is like in a band dynamic, there can be that thing where like, oh, we're all chill musicians. We don't want to be like taking the lead on this interview. So you might kind of hop around each other in a way where the interview would be way better if you sort of had a designated person who's like going to answer most of the questions and then other people can field other things or chime in. But this other thing that happens with me is like this false humility sets in. Like when I'm alone, I'm like, oh, I'm a genius. Everyone wants to hear
That's
everything.
That's what Chris does on Friday night, sitting home, drinking a beer, playing guitar, going, I'm so good.
Like, of course, the entire world wants to hear everything about what I think about every topic. But then in practice, you know, I don't know what it is, just like polite upbringing, I become shy about making the thing about me, which is ridiculous. It's an interview. This person is interviewing me. I'm performing my songs. Yeah. And then they're, you know, this particular radio thing was 15, 20 minutes of interview. I'm like, this is my moment. But there's a hesitation to embrace that and really just make it about yourself. That's fine. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know why so many musicians, including me, get shy about that. So be ready to just make it all about you.
Yeah. And also being prepared. If there's somebody in the band that is clearly more outspoken or two of them, it's okay. Let them speak. Mm-hmm. Not everyone has to speak. I've seen so many band interviews where someone asks a question and everyone just sits there and kind of shrugs. And that kind of gets into our next point, but we won't jump to it yet. But so it's like, it's okay to go and going, here's, hey guys, here's some key talking points. These are the things we want to talk about. and know that who needs to sit closer to the mic if it's a podcast or radio interview, and who, you know some of the good stories or some of the things that you need to you want to bring up and highlight. Because oftentimes I think one of my biggest complaints with artist interviews, why I don't get into them and listen to a bunch of podcasts that typically interview artists just about, you know, music, is they don't have much to say. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like they're unprepared. Like, oh, I didn't know you were going to ask me a question on air in this radio interview. And I'm like,
right, like,
say something interesting. This is your moment. Be prepared with it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just said this, but I don't. There's no rule that says the lead singer or the main songwriter necessarily has to be the main interviewer. If you're, you know, maybe they should be there, but someone else can totally take over and take the lead on communicating the story. And then just a real simple thing is don't give one word answers. Like, that's just a showstopper there. You know, like, oh, what did it feel like to record your newest album? It was cool.
Yeah, when you're unprepared, you are making it really hard for a professional media person, assuming they're professional, to cover you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to maybe dictate the amount of coverage or how big the coverage is, because they got to have something to work with. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll say on being prepared, if you show up to a podcast or a radio interview with your guitar, just because you had it with you and you need it for the gig later on, don't be surprised if they ask you to play on air, and you should be prepared to play on air. People love that stuff. It worked wonders for Small Town Poets. But if you really have a problem with playing on air, or for whatever reason your music doesn't fit, whatever, you need to be prepared to have a gracious response to that. Otherwise, you can get yourself in a really awkward situation. The last thing you want to be doing is trying to figure out how to perform a song with one guitar for a band while you're playing on the air, you know?
Just leave the guitar in the hallway or something.
Yeah, because that happened to us over and over again. We always had planned to do it, but it would be there were some certain situations where we weren't expecting it, and we just happened to have something with us because we came from someplace. Mm-hmm. And now you're kind of awkwardly, how do we handle this, you know? So be prepared. All right, number two we've got is you can ruin a press opportunity by leaving a bad impression. What is this all about, Chris?
It's about being a rock star and treating the person that's asking you questions like they're some kind of idiot because you're maybe sick of answering the same questions. But this is the first time they've ever met you. Their audience, whether it's listeners on a radio station or readers of their magazine or whatever, might not know you. So they're going to ask you the same damn questions everyone else is, and that's fine. That's why you're there, to answer the same question but to a new audience. So don't be too cool. Don't think this is beneath you. I mean, some of my favorite acts in the world have been guilty of that. You know, like Radiohead basically made a whole movie about how they were miserable.
That's funny that you said that. When I was exactly going to say
Radiohead. People is easy.
Yes, yes.
That whole movie is based around their torture of being on the road and having to do these press junkets or whatever you call them along with their tour. Made for a compelling movie, and I love Radiohead, but ultimately I end up feeling bad for most of the journalists. I mean, some did ask stupid questions, but still. We'll get to that later, but
that is the prime example of this point about leaving a bad impression. That video, when I got that video, I had just come off the road, you know, doing that full time. And I felt like that was somebody who could identify with my pain. I'm like, somebody gets it. Even the way the film is constructed is genius, because you never actually see a live show. I think you might see like a clip
snippets.
Or something.
You get snippets,
but
yeah.
You see more video of someone standing outside the venue while the show is going on. And I felt like they totally illuminated the world of what it's like to be on tour, that there's this event that happens for 2 hours that the fans get excited about, but the rest of the world for the artist is so boring.
There's a lot of just backstage waiting around, and then like the after parties that are just super awkward.
And the those guys don't seem like the social butterflies anyway, but no. The scene of them sitting, there's like this one scene where they just look totally uninterested and the press guy's trying so hard to get something mm-hmm. because it's Radiohead. I've got to be able to write something and they're not saying anything. So
this is a bad example actually that we're bringing up because obviously their attitude did not hurt them. Their career is fine.
No, because we're talking about a band that it was at that time on top of the world, selling one of the highest selling bands at that time. Where if you're an independent artist, you don't have that reputation for them to, you know, if you're interviewing with Rolling Stone and you're Radiohead, if you get a bad interview, you're still getting covered and it's right. going to be a nice article.
But well, in the age of the like prima donna, no, I'm not saying Radiohead's prima donna, but like, you know, that sort of age of the rock star who's can be aloof or antagonistic is kind of over because there's so many artists, there's so much music, like a blogger or a journalist or whatever could just be like, well, screw you. I'm going to write about 400 other people that are in my inbox right now.
And also, I think in the age of social media, the bloggers and media also are less guarded with their negative opinions. Right. And they might actually say something in their interview.
Sure.
Even if they're forced to cover it, like, I thought these guys were total jerks, or say something online. So I think also it's important to... I think going back to point one, having those talking points, I think a lot of reasons why artists come off leaving a bad impression is because they haven't thought about this person's doing a job. Yeah, they're going to ask some similar questions. Here's some key talking points. I want positive press coverage. Mm-hmm. I want people to want to cover me. And so you got to go in having good, you know, social skills.
One thing we also talked about is the person who, the interviewer who asks like the curveball question, which when you're being fielded this question, it seems ridiculous. It's a little off-putting. Suddenly like you're off guard and you don't know what to say. So you end up feeling a little bit foolish, but really if you just stay calm and like you can try to either answer the question absurdly or give an earnest answer or just say, you know what, I don't know. Like if you stay calm, the other person will end up seeming like the weirdo as long as you're not rude.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to just, you know, not swing for the curveball.
Yeah. Sometimes the host is the weirdo and you just got to deal with it.
Right.
And I think it's so much human nature for us to get defensive, even when it's something that you shouldn't even be getting defensive about. You just feel like you're being put on the spot. And you kind of don't know how to react. It's okay to go, next question, we're going to move on.
Right. And that's what those questions are for. They want you to suddenly feel whatever the word you just said. It was the perfect word. Off guard.
I don't know.
Yeah, just they want to surprise you to see how you'll react. But like you
on the spot.
On the spot.
That's what I said.
You don't have to engage.
You know, it's hard to prepare for that, but you got to maybe think through, if I'm in that situation, what's my exit strategy? Because I might need one.
Get up and walk out. No.
All right. The next one we've got on the list is knowing your audience.
Yes. So if you don't know your audience, you're going to, well, let me just give an anecdote. So I edit CD Baby's DIY musician blog. And when I interview people, artists, I generally want to hear about the strategies behind the promotion and the, you know, launch strategies. I want to hear the intentional bits where, you know, intentionality met their ambition and they were the tips, the advice, all that kind of stuff. I don't really care about what you were feeling when you wrote your album or whatever. You know, it's not necessarily a songwriting thing, but inevitably, when I interview people, particularly the kind of further up they are in their career, they go to their talking points, which are generally based on a music journalism, you know, the people that want the drama behind the songs and all that stuff. And then it becomes clear to me, oh, you don't know what the DIY musician's audience is. I always try to communicate it beforehand,
mm-hmm.
but it still doesn't sink in. They go into their old habits of talking points stuff, and then it's like, well, our audience probably doesn't care about this. And now I have to... I don't know, ask you for more or scrap the interview. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, I think number one, you got to understand who will be getting or hearing the content, mm-hmm. whether it's a radio station you're going into, whether it's a blog or a TV show or whatever, who watches, who listens, who reads it. If you don't know that, you can miss out on some opportunities, both from a strategic standpoint and also the tactical standpoint. So like on the strategic standpoint, like you were saying, reaching out to press, both you and I get a lot of solicitations like, we've got this new album release, cover us on your podcast. I'm like, you clearly have not listened to this podcast because that's not what we do here. And you get that for the blog.
Yep.
And so reaching out, understanding who their audience is, so you can tailor a message that's intriguing. So it may be that you just have some standard message. It may have worked sometimes. Some people bite on your press solicitations. But if you understand who their audience is, you may be able to tailor your story a little bit more so it's even more intriguing. Mm-hmm. I think the easy example would be that, you know, your local press, like, I mean, going down even to like neighborhood newspapers, or sometimes the fact that you're local and that you're doing this thing is the most interesting thing to them.
Right.
The music is, it's like, oh, cool, this guy who does this by day is an artist by night, and this is his story. If you reach out to the New York Times, they don't care about that.
Right. There needs to be something else.
Their audience is totally different, and what they're going to want and be interested in for their audience is different. Same with like certain blogs that have certain themes or podcasts. And so there's that. But then even what you say, knowing who might be listening, there's things you can say that might intrigue them more, or things that you can actually just turn people off by.
Right. I know, like with me, there's been this thing because I've lived in Portland, Oregon and Portland, Maine. I know if I'm in one of those two towns, that could be a pretty sizable chunk of the interview, the difference between the Portlands. Like, people are interested in that. And that has nothing to do with my music, but it's still something I can talk about that might interest people.
Yeah.
And then somehow hopefully tie it back to the music scenes, which ties back to my music in some way. You know, like, I want to get it back to my music. But I'm also ready to talk about that, which is so regional specific, but, you know, it's just one of those things.
I think when you have a fleshed out story and really understand a lot of key story points, being able to shuffle them around based on who you're talking to,
mm-hmm.
I think that's really key. And I think the older you get, the more opportunities there are, because you have more life experience and more story behind you, and people start to get interested in what you're doing for different reasons.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, you can always lead people back to what your most important message is, as long as you've addressed the needs of the audience. So, like, I think with our blog, obviously the reason why any artist wants to answer questions from me is because ultimately they're hoping people will listen to their music and stream it and buy it or whatever, or watch their video. But, you know, let's say they're doing a video premiere, I've got to ask them questions about the production and the budget and, you know, what went into making this video. And ultimately, the same goal is being met. People are going to watch your video, but, like, I got to get all that other stuff first. So,
yeah. I would say that this is probably one of the number one reasons that people don't get press from there, or get bites from their soliciting press and podcasts and blogs to cover their band, because, you know, everything I get from probably 95% of the random list people put me on, or where they're pitching me on something, it's like, so-and-so, insert artist name I've never heard of before, is releasing a new album. Will you cover them on your podcast? I'm like, what? You don't know what we do, who we are, mm-hmm. and who our audience is and what we need. And so it's just delete.
Yeah, and if I could just say one personal gripe, which I think I've already addressed to some degree, but it drives me nuts when artists are afraid to seem intentional about their careers. Like, you know, they just, oh, it's just art we create. It's magic and luck and, like, cool. We're just going, you know, like, no way. I don't believe you. Either someone else did all this work for you, or you had a plan and you executed on it. Like, so that's what, you know, for me, that's what I want to hear about. And it's like, get over yourselves that this is all just, oh, it's just magic. Like, stop it. No one believes you.
Yes, it wasn't that I wrote a song, the heavens opened,
and everyone loved it.
There's
a long way from A to Z.
Yeah. And the journey is what's interesting to people.
Yeah.
That's what people want to hear about. The Olympics just happened again. And I, you know, when I did a keynote at our DIY musician conference in Chicago 2 years ago, the Summer Olympics had just happened. And I think the story building behind the Olympic athletes is so genius, because nobody cares about these sports because we don't talk about them ever the rest of the year.
Right.
But because they invest time in specifically the journey and the hardship and all that, that you're like bawling when they're like getting a gold medal, because you feel that human connection of like hardship and keeping going. And so I think that those are the real opportunities to make personal connections with people. Okay, here's the one I added in when you were saying you're unprepared. So this may be like unprepared 2.0. Uh-huh. That after you start doing a lot of press interviews and you run into the weirdo, the amateur journalist and everything
every
like that.
Every archetype.
you can come off as leaving a bad impression or being frustrated. But so this point is that you need to be prepared to potentially direct the whole interview and process, especially if you've done it a lot. This is something that became so key for us in turning some press that would have been probably just wasted time and opportunity, not like we were going to get bad press, but really understanding that, oh, this person, they haven't been doing this long. They're in a small town. They haven't had exposure to how major, like larger media outlets work. Let me guide them.
They might not know what questions to even ask. They might not know a thing about you besides like the 2-paragraph bio they read on your website or something. So that's a good point. Just go where you need to go. And
understanding that their questions may be dumb because they don't know any better. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean you just have to sit there and pout and answer dumb questions. Get the conversation going in a better direction. Take control of the situation. You know, you don't be rude, because ultimately they just want a good story. And so it's okay to step up and start directing the situation, knowing the things that have worked well in other markets, especially if you're like been on tour and done a lot of interviews, especially like local press that aren't going to be seeing what you said the last 2 weeks in every city. It's an opportunity for you to learn from that and really just start directing people. And that's what we did with Small Town Poets, where especially on air with the radio, we had that dialed. So like the DJs would just sit back and let us basically do our thing.
I was thinking like when you're practicing, you should practice going on and on and on and telling your whole story, you know, off of one dumb question. Practice talking for 20 minutes about it and go through your whole press, you know. Of course, in the moment, don't go for 20 minutes. Like, it's got to be a conversation still to some degree, but like, I think be prepared to go for a while.
And it's okay to say, like, if someone asks you a question that's kind of boring, you're like, oh, interesting. How about I answer this question? This is what I really want to talk about. Or say, we could talk about that, or let me tell you about the time our band tour van slid in ice, rolled on the side of the road, and we all almost died. and then I wrote a song about it.
That was a kind of point I was wanting to mention, is like, keep your answers real visceral and descriptive and, you know, emotional. I don't know if that's the right word, but like, so that people who are listening feel like they're in your shoes. Like, the more of those kind of details, the better.
Yeah. And the reason why I felt like that was worth highlighting outside of having talking points, because talking points are kind of like, here's the key things we want to say. But when you meet up with somebody that's clearly, they're going to need your help to make this a worthy opportunity for yourself. And a lot of times, then they're like, oh my gosh, those guys were so amazing. Come back, you know.
They made my job so easy.
And that's what we were doing with on-air stuff, because radio stations, that's where we were like the number one place we were getting asked just dumb questions. And so we got tired of it being asked dumb questions, so we started like spinning it and just creating these stories and trying to make it interesting.
Did you guys practice that, or did it just happen because you were doing it every day?
We'd talk about it on the bus. We'd be like, okay, if we have, how can we, we're going to be doing these interviews, how can we make it better? Mm-hmm. And let's just create, you know, they ask a dumb question, let's just talk about something better. They don't know. And a lot, so it's like, let's illuminate them to what we think's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times they're just thinking about the next question they have to ask anyway, so.
Yeah, and you never know who's in that chair on a radio station or podcast, or if it's a bigger blog, you don't know who got the assignment. They may know nothing about you. Hmm. It may be the on-air DJ that was there at the time, and that's happened many times with like, I really don't know much about what you guys do. I just happen to be the DJ that I found out about this 10 minutes ago.
So tell me,
so
who the hell are you?
Being prepared to just run the show so it doesn't turn out to be a horrible event. I thought that was worthy of mentioning. All right, we've got two more. Not promoting it.
Yeah, which I think there's two ways to take this. One is that when you're going into a radio station or you're, you know, getting on the phone to do an interview, like there's a chance in that moment to turn that into something, whether it's a tweet or an Instagram picture or whatever. Make sure you're making it an event that your fans are feeling like excited for you about and like they know about. And then also once this interview or whatever it is over, making sure you can share it. A link or a video, whatever it is, you know, like make sure you're making the most out of it after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, these are great opportunities to, one, make the radio station or blog or press outlet happy because they see you posting about, like, if you're going to be on air or on a TV show or something, they see a little chat about, like, oh, these guys are excited. That puts more energy on the front end of it. Like, they're coming into this interview or appearance feeling like, oh, these guys are into it. I'm into it now, you know? And it just looks good to, as story points, you know, when other press see things online, you know, they go, okay, this band wants to come. They click on your Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and they see some of this stuff.
Oh, let's invite them.
Yeah, it looks like, oh, these guys know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It has that story building quality, but also it makes those press outlets feel special too, because you're sharing the content and they feel like, oh, this is worthy of us because they're exposing us to their audience. It's not just, you know, the band being exposed to the press outlet's audience. It has that mutual benefit to each other.
And I think it's easy to remember to do that when it feels big. Like, you know, when I was going to this station in Maine, I'm like, this is like the only station I ever listened to when I'm driving around. Like, I love this. So it felt legitimately exciting. But if it feels like, you know, Podunk Town's newspaper, you might have to work yourself up to being excited, but like ultimately remember, like they're doing what you want. They're talking about you. So like, I don't know, that's important. And so just psych yourself up and show your thanks in that regard too. This is all reminding me, we should take a picture for Instagram.
So yes, that's right.
I don't know if this is really a press opportunity, but we're in the same room.
We are in the same room. We should take a picture.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect lead into the last point, and that was not saying thank you. This does not necessarily have to be on social media. I think this is better if it's not. You can do it on social media as well, but I think following up with an email or even a card, or a real card, if you still remember how to write things with a pen. Oh, my penmanship has gotten so bad.
So bad, mine too.
It was bad to begin with. But just writing a note or an email just saying, hey, thank you so much. We appreciate your time and effort. We really enjoyed that. And even just if you have a picture, attaching it to the email of you with them, as, you know, I'm not doing this to get social points and likes. I'm just sending it because we appreciated you. That is huge. And over the years, we've been invited back to so many places just based on the thank you note. I've heard that at least 10 times in our career where a promoter or a radio station said, we don't even play your music, but we wanted you guys back because you guys were so appreciative and we got your thank you note and all that.
Well, and I think we musicians think of these people as gatekeepers who are grumpy and don't give a crap or whatever. But like, I've gone into stations before where those thank you notes are hanging up on like a bulletin board. Like, they appreciate it. Well, and I'm not saying every one of them appreciates it. Some of them might end up in the garbage, but it makes you memorable, and I also think they do appreciate it more often than not. And then there your face is, or your card, or your signature, or whatever. And
yeah, like you said, I think people tend to think of press outlets as gatekeepers, which in theory they are. They, whatever they write, or whatever they're thinking about, or whatever they're interested in, is what's going to get covered through their press outlet. So in that respects, they are a gatekeeper, but that's not how they view themselves. They view themselves as someone who's just trying to do a job and trying to write interesting stories or cover interesting people or interesting topics or great music. And when you look at it that way, you know, it can be a thankless job. What they get, just a lot of solicitations. Uh-huh. Everyone feels like they're just they feel like they're just being used, a means to an end. And when you actually take care and like commenting and thanking them, it goes a long way. Same with club bookers. It's the same kind of thing. And so just remembering to do that is a big deal. We still do it today whenever we play shows. We write a thank you note and we send it to the people. And actually, we just discovered this was genius. There's an app that will automate this for you.
Really?
Yes. And what it does, and why it's genius, is because you can upload your signature.
Oh.
And for us, since we're all in different locations,
you can't all sign the same card.
We can't necessarily
right?
all sign the same card. But I forget what the app's name is. I need to find out. But it'll mail an actual physical note card.
That's awesome.
So you can type something in and have your signatures. And so you can be on the road and just
that
automate
piece of
it.
Advice was worth the whole hour podcast. Right
See,
there.
When we podcast this long, we know that the diehards are left over.
Right.
The people, that's when we get down to real business. And I was really disappointed because I found out after I left, because we were all together in Florida. And while we were there, I was sharing a room with our drummer and he had an iPad Pro, which the stylus on that and the way you write feels so real and natural that it was like one of the first things I've written with a stylus where you can really get your signature and feel like you're writing.
Huh.
And so I was bummed that we all didn't just sign that.
Yeah, right.
And take that, and then we can use it for other things. But yeah, that app allows you to just mail a thank you note. So it
Sweet.
Automates it. You still want to personalize it and say their name and say thank you.
Right.
It probably has some fonts that look handwritten.
Hmm.
And but that's what we did for that last gig.
Genius. That is genius. I like it. I had just one thing I forgot to say in terms of being visceral and potentially reaching an audience who knows nothing about you and remembering to make this interview about you is don't be afraid to quote your own lyrics. The person might not know your songs, and your lyrics might be the perfect way to convey your story. So have those at the ready if you need it.
That's a good tip. I feel like the biggest missed opportunity in press with press or just with artists talking about their music and their career probably comes down to how little they actually tie the lyrics to experiences mm-hmm. and talk about them,
right.
Like specifically what they were thinking and trying to say. That's why I think that one song Exploder by the Long
there.
Winters is so powerful because he really does a masterful job of bringing it all home to these experiences he was having and how they came out in the form of lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the songwriting podcasts I've checked out, a lot of them I just get bored because I don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah, quote your lyrics.
All right, well, if you've got a comment you'd like to make about a press opportunity that you had that was interesting, funny, or went poorly, or went really well, and you've got a tip about it, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can leave a comment in the comment section at cdbabypodcast.com, which not many people use, apparently. We get tons of phone calls and emails, but the reason I like people using the comment section is because then everyone can see it and they can weigh in. So feel free to use that as an option, and if you want to get feedback from other artists, you know, it's worth posting something there. I always check them and weigh in. But speaking of lots of emails and calls, we have some. So let's get to a phone call.
Hey, guys. This is Craig William with the band Wayward City. I'm just calling to respond to your last podcast about putting the phones in the pouches and not having them, out at the shows. I know you were talking about how Jack White did it. And I was actually recently at a comedy show over the summer for Dave Chappelle, and I feel like if there was a lot more social buzz about what the shows were about, then we wouldn't have known about all the great surprise guests that were coming out. All we knew was that it was just going to be Dave Chappelle and his musical guest, which that night was Childish Gambino. So it was a really great show, and then we were surprised with other performers, like Hannibal Buress did a set and it was great. So that's just my take. Looking forward to seeing you guys in Nashville. We're actually going to be doing a mini tour on the way down, so if you guys are listening, check us out, Wayward City, on Spotify, iTunes Music, anywhere you're streaming. All right, thanks.
So thanks for the call, Craig. So I think his theory was by making everyone put away their phones, there'll be less social buzz.
Right.
And so he's pro phone.
That kind of how I feel, I think. I mean, again, like we said, as long as it's not the phone is out the entire time, like get your moment, capture your thing, share it, and then be there.
I feel like we're getting to a point where people are realizing that they don't need to video an hour long show because they're never going to watch it again.
Yeah. And a better version will be on Vivo anyways.
I agree. I was surprised we didn't get more feedback about the phone issue
that
we discussed a couple episodes ago. Yeah, that was the only call, and there weren't any comments. I thought there'd be more comments about that. It's not too late. You can still weigh in about the phone issue if you want. But we've got another call. This one is about taxes.
Hi, Kevin and Chris. This is Brian with the Martini Shot. We're a band out of Colorado. You can check us out at martinishotband.com. So my question has to do with taxes. With tax time coming up, wondering if you had any tools that you're using or tricks for organizing taxes and music deductions. As I'm sure you experience, it's always a bear this time of year to put all of that homework, quote-unquote homework, together. Just wondering if you're willing to share any helpful hints in that area. I appreciate all that you guys do and keep up the great work. And, of course, hope to see you in Nashville. Thanks, guys.
My biggest piece of advice is that you don't want any advice from me on taxes.
Yeah, that's the
My
best.
Receipts go in a giant manila envelope, and by the end of the year, it is just stuffed and completely disorganized, and I take them out one at a time and add them all up, and I'm up all night doing it. I do my mileage all that way based on my Google Calendar. It's terrible.
Sounds like you're a true musician.
I
just
am.
One folder.
So don't do what I do.
Yeah, we should definitely say that we are not tax experts. And also, this is going to only apply to those of you listening in the United States, because I have no idea what the tax situation is in other countries. Mm-hmm. I will give you a couple tips. Lately, I have been buying most of my music gear from Reverb.com. I love that store. It's easy to buy too much gear and spend lots of money there. So I've been buying all my music purchases there. And so all the receipts I can just look up online and pull from there. Now, in your situation, Chris, it sounds like something like QuickBooks might be ideal or something. I guarantee you that there's some app where you can scan your receipt and it'll organize it for you.
There must be, but I don't know about it.
But that seems like the last thing I want to find myself doing is
it's awful.
Messing with receipts. The other thing, I've been doing my taxes with TurboTax, or not TurboTax. Yeah, TurboTax. And I have some royalty income from some, like this past year, had song placements and bought some gear and just some general royalty income that still trickles in. And it handles it okay, but you still need to get some advice about like how to file properly, whether it's a business or it's just like, you know, some supplemental income, side income, just, I don't know. I would go to some place like that. And then if you have a lot of questions and a lot of weird outstanding circumstances, get a tax professional.
Yeah, I usually end up doing, I get someone to do the taxes after I've added everything, because I do not understand depreciation. I do not understand, like, you know, if you have a physical inventory of CDs you manufactured, how those depreciate and how, you know, how you offset the costs of them. You know, the costs all happen at once, but then you sell them over 10 years. It's like that stuff, I have no idea. So someone else do it for me.
And apparently with the new tax changes that happened in the U.S. a few months back, I've heard that how musicians can file for that stuff is supposed to change next year, but I don't know for sure. Mm. That could all just be speculation.
We'll see. We'll have to do a tax episode.
That was probably the least help we could possibly be. But someone will call in with the answer.
Yeah.
So if there's a tax professional out there, feel free to call in.
Oh, you know there is. And I hung out with him in Kansas City, and he listens to our podcast, so we should consult him.
Ah, okay. I don't know who this is.
His name's Nathan.
Ah, okay. Nathan, give us a call. All right, we got two emails. So I'm going to read the two emails and we'll finish with the rest of the calls. Hey, Kevin, wondering your thoughts. I manage my brother and we have the potential to get press from multiple outlets for his single release. My question is it disrespectful to get press from more than one outlet in the same city, who are most likely competition, for the same news? I appreciate any and all press we could get, but I don't want to step on toes at the same time. If one city magazine covers it and then another one, and they see each other's articles, will this cause them to not want to work together in the future? Thoughts? Thanks, Nolan. Very timely question.
Yeah. My answer is it's absolutely okay to get as much press as you can, unless what you're trying to deliver to them has been discussed as a premiere or an exclusive bit of content or news. And then obviously you want to give them the opportunity to be the first for some window of time. But if it's just you're coming through town or you have a release, get as much press as you can. They're going to write different kinds of things about it anyways.
Yeah, I emailed Nolan and that's basically what I said. I said, the only thing is if you offer somebody an exclusive, do not screw them over on that because they will get so angry and they may just not cover you at all. But then if that same person's there next time, they won't trust you or may just pass over it. But yeah, if you're not offering an exclusive, the more the merrier, you know, there's no limit. So thanks for that question. It was a good one. All right, here's the next email. This is from George. Hey guys, I'm an experimental electronic artist who creates music as Threat Machine. I recently started listening to the podcast and have been binging on past episodes through iTunes. It's great to know that there are other musicians out there who are going through the same process as I am. Now my question. I have an album that I will be releasing through CD Baby this summer. There's a certain online publication that releases a compilation album through Bandcamp every year. They like to feature new music and new artists. I've submitted one of the tracks off my upcoming album, and I'm wondering if there would be any copyright or content issues with this. Let's say the compilation is put onto Spotify and features one of my unreleased tracks. Then when I release my full album with that track on it, will there be issues on Spotify, Bandcamp, or anywhere else with rights, playlists, payment, tracking? Is this a good idea, or is it a good rule of thumb to only submit tracks that I have previously released first? Thanks again for your advice, George.
It's a great question. I'm scratching my head a little bit because I think it would really depend. Well,
I've done this
okay. In
multiple ways. First, the scenario of a compilation album through Bandcamp, actually it wasn't Bandcamp, that we did one through, was Noise Trade. And it was a song from, I'm not sure if the album was out yet, but it was from our last Christmas album. They were doing a big Christmas compilation and they featured one of our tracks and they made it free. And it was going to be free downloads for an X amount of time. That was just one thing. It'd be just on that platform for a certain date and it'd come down. So you definitely need to know the parameters of it. So like if it's just on Bandcamp, the situation would be like, who's going to manage payments? How long will it be there? Do I have rights to put it up on Bandcamp myself? Chances are they're going to say yes, but really when it comes to compilation albums, where I'd be most concerned with is how long are they going to leave it live and where are they going to put it and how are you going to get paid? So those three things, like how long is it going to be out? Where are they going to be distributed to and how are you going to get paid? Because it is an issue that if they're putting it on Spotify and everywhere else, that you could have two tracks that are the same
versions.
Yeah. That all your fans might latch onto the other one and you make less money from it.
Right. Yeah. That was my biggest concern is that, you know, how does that stuff work? If they have separate ISRC codes and they're mastered slightly separately, they're in a way working against each other because ultimately you'd want all the plays of a song to be tallied together. And
yeah. And if they're just putting it on Bandcamp, like you mentioned, which I've seen press outlets do, pretty common, I think it's just a matter of finding out how long is it going to be up and how am I going to get paid? Mm-hmm. We were on a compilation album that was distributed. This was just a couple years ago that went along with a documentary. And it was a song we recorded just for that documentary. And for that one, it was very clear where they were putting it. It was very clear how we were going to get paid. But then it also, there was a timeline of after a certain date, I think it was after the documentary came out, or maybe it was like 6 months after, we could re-release that master recording ourselves if we wanted to. Because we own the master recording. They didn't retain ownership of the master recording. So that's something that you know, might be an exchange that's worth making. I mean, you definitely want to make sure they're not taking ownership in your music for a compilation record. There's, unless it's one of those like, now today's hits or whatever, which still they shouldn't be taking control of your master recordings. Never give them control of your master recordings. So that's my advice. I'd say it's worthwhile doing and it'll probably expose you to some more people and you may or may not make any money off of it. With the Noise Trade thing, we didn't even get names from the people that had to put in their email to get access to it. All we got was just the exposure. But we did see sort of a halo effect from it, that people were discovering it and checking out the rest of the music because of it. All right, we've got two more calls. Here we go.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Daniel Cooper calling in again. This time I've got a question. It's kind of about copyright, I think. I'm not actually sure, but I'm aiming to put out a song taken from Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, where I've set his lyrics to my own music, which means that part of the written song is in the public domain and part is my original work. So when it comes time to do that, when it comes time to submit it, how do I identify that song in copyright kind of terms, I guess? I've been advised to go with public domain to submit the song under that. But if I do that, am I forfeiting my claim on the music that I've written and the revenue that might come from that? Thanks for your help. Again, this is Daniel Cooper with a U in the Cooper. And you can find me at danielcoopermusic.com. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Daniel.
Did you consult Joel on this one?
I did not. I meant to beforehand, but I forgot. It's been a busy week here at CD Baby. We've had all our reps from Latin America up here and lots of meetings. And
The advice he got seemed wrong to me, that you wouldn't want to list the entire track in the public domain because then you'd be forfeiting.
We definitely need a lawyer to call in. I can follow up with our in-house counsel, or if Jim Jesse wants to call in again. To me, this seems like this would be an original work, because you can do whatever you want with public domain material.
Yeah.
I know in past we were talking about copywriting just your arrangement of a public domain thing, where you're using the lyrics, you're using the basic chord structure and everything. So you know the song ultimately isn't different, but this would be like a new composition just based on public domain. So I would assume that you could copyright it and it become your composition.
Right, as if you owned 100% of it.
Yeah.
That was sort of my assumption.
That's an interesting question, though. We'll see what kind of response we get. But thank you for that call. There's, you know, lots of comments and questions over the past two years about public domain.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other question I get all the time on the blog is people who are in a situation where they're buying beats or they're collaborating with producers and they want to know how to split the publishing. And I never know how to answer, because when you say producer, I don't know what that means. Did they, I do know what it means, but there's five different ways they could be producing you. Did they compose the music? Did they just help you figure out a few musical things? It's tough to answer any of those questions.
Depends what musical world you come from too. From my world, the producer is someone that stands there and tells you that you suck and this is how to make it better.
And they're not entitled to any publishing.
No.
They get points or something. But and then in the hip hop world, for all I know, this producer could be writing all of the music. And then all you're doing is, well, not all, but you're coming up with the words or something like that. But
it'd be interesting to either do an article, or if it merited a whole episode, the publishing breakdown and songwriter breakdowns of a hip hop track. Because I've heard that, some hip hop tracks could have 10, 15 writers, someone writes a line, multiple people are rapping, there's multiple people contributing beats.
There's samples involved.
Yeah. All right, we've got one last call, and here it is.
Hey guys, this is Blake from my musical project, Glowing Ice. You can find me on Facebook at Glowing Ice. Fan of the podcast, love you guys. Found you about a year ago and been listening ever since. My question is pertaining to a single I have just released, or will be releasing in the next couple days, and it's part of an album that will be out in May or a couple months from now. Wondering if anybody who bought the single would be able to, say they buy the single and then they want to buy the album later, will they have to rebuy that single that's going to be on the album, or is it already taken away where they'll have to, they could buy the album at a reduced price because they had bought the single prior? I've seen artists do that before, where I'll buy a few singles from them before the album drops, and then when the album's out, I buy it at a cheaper rate because I bought the singles beforehand. But that's my question. How do I do that with CD Baby and everything, making sure people don't have to buy the same song twice? Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Probably the only way you can do that is if they're an iTunes user. That's the only service I know that if someone buys a single, they could, in a very roundabout way, go into their account and select the Complete My Album, only if iTunes knows it's from that album. So chances are they're just going to buy it again.
Because it's only 99 cents.
Yeah.
If that they're...
Yeah, because now that I think about it, the Complete My Album feature only works if like the whole album's out and they just buy one song. But iTunes wouldn't know that that single was related to a song on that album
right.
if you released it as a single ahead of time.
True.
That's the only platform that I know that has any sort of feature like that. Most likely they're just going to buy it again. You get an extra dollar. That's part of the benefit of releasing a single. It's like people buy the single and then they go buy the album. And I don't think people are like slicing and dicing the purchase price to go, wait a minute, I paid for this single twice. Somebody might think that, but it's not such a big deal that it's going to keep them from buying the album. And I wouldn't worry about it too much as an artist.
Especially because, you know, well, I won't say it. No one's downloading anything anyways. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, if they're streaming, it doesn't matter. However, I will say that if you are releasing singles ahead of your album release for tracks that are going to be on the album, you should be sure to use the same ISRC code. So in your CD Baby account, if you've released a couple singles that are going to be from an upcoming album, there's probably the ISRC codes in there. Well, there will be ISRC codes in there. If you use those codes for those same songs on the album, it will join the stream counts for both those master recordings. Because basically what you're telling Spotify and all the other streaming services is this is the exact same master recording. So as long as it's the exact same master recording, it's not a remix and then you release the album version. As long as it's the exact same master recording, it'll let them know that gets accounted for the same. So that's one trick that is worth noting. Yeah, so thanks for the calls. Again, our listener line is 360-524-2209. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com and leave some notes in the comment section. And if you want to rate us favorably on iTunes, please do so. It always helps, at least I hear. I hear it helps.
It's what you're supposed to do,
right? It's what you're supposed to do.
If you want to rate us unfavorably, don't.
Yeah, don't. Go find something better to do with your time. All right. And the conferences are coming up. We got Spain next month, Chris.
That's a month away.
After
wow.
The next time we podcast in person together,
be in another
we'll
country.
Be in Spain. Unless we decide to do one next week because you're here in town.
Oh, that's true.
Next Friday. Yeah. But you'll be coming off that
I'll be exhausted.
Peter Gabriel high. You won't know what
I'll
to do.
I'll just be asleep in the chair, right?
Yeah. So, we'll be in Spain at the DIY Musician Conference at the Berkeley campus there in Valencia, Spain. You can get your tickets online at DIYMusicianCon.com. And you can get tickets to Nashville as well.
And there are not that many early bird tickets left for that. So
yeah,
act now.
If you like to save money, buy now.
I will say, I got a comment, or actually it was an email today from someone saying, hey, I'm going to go to the conference. What do I need to do to take advantage of everything? And I know we've addressed this before, but basically get your tickets as soon as you can so that you get all of the attendee emails. And when you get those, just act on any opportunities that we're presenting as soon as you can. That's basically the way to make sure you're getting the most out of
that
things.
Fit what you do.
Yeah, right. Not just any opportunity.
Yeah.
But yes. Any relevant opportunities.
Yes.
Act quick. That's my tip. So.
Yep. Well, Chris, it was good to sit across the table from
you. Too,
you
too.
We need to grab someone and foot, document this moment with the camera.
I've got a phone right here.
Yeah, let's just, we can just selfie it up here.
All
so
right.
You can check out CD Baby on Instagram to see the glorious selfie that Chris... Oh, you're taking off your glasses. It's getting serious.
Let's see here. Right. How's that?
Excellent. It's so good. everyone should run over to Instagram right now. Now let me do my camera from my perspective. All right. We've got so many great photos for
options.
You. We've got options. Check it out on CD Baby's Instagram, and you can leave a comment there too. Say hi. And that's gonna do it.
See you next time.
All right. We'll be right back. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.